Chapter 29, which is on the top page, is 296, which is Kuf Mem Ches on the base. A new letter, chapter 29. There's not a lot of commentaries. Even the commentaries on Agaras HaKodesh, by the time getting after 28, they kind of like fizzle out.
Why?
I guess they get tired. I have no idea.
I'm done.
They're not a whole lot. What can I tell you? I mean, but you see this also with many commentaries on Parshas and whatnot. The first verses of the Parsha have like a zillion commentaries, and then as the Parsha just like
it kind of
extends,
down,
it gets less and less. Yeah. So
the last part. Well, yeah, I know. Yeah.
So the commentaries on Tanya. So, and then basically when we get to, we have 29, 30, 31, and 32, and then, which 29 is going to take us a bunch of weeks because it's not short. 31 and 32 will probably be like a week each. Then comes Kuntres Acharon for like 12 chapters, and we're on our own for Kuntres Acharon because we'll explain when we get there. It's pretty hard. Okay, so now Perichav Tes. I don't know the prominence, and this is thinking that this is a letter. I'm actually wondering if this is indeed was ever meant to be a letter, or if this was a mimer that didn't get dated, because it's written very much like a mimer rather than a letter, and there's no provenance on it. So it starts with a pasuk, and he asks a question, and he goes off on tangents, and eventually he will come back to answer those questions. It says, Eshet Chayel Teres Baila. This is the topic sentence. Okay? A woman of valor is a crown to her husband. So he's going to focus here on the word. What does this verse mean? So the real word he's going to focus on first is the word a teres, a crown. What is a crown? So it's Issa. So he's going to bring in three Maimari Chazal and then ask questions on those Maimari Chazal. These Maimari Chazal really have nothing to do with the Pasuk, Eshes Chayel Teres Baila. So it's part of the Gemara and Perek Dal de Megillah. Which is, this is also a statement which is taken from Pirkei Avos, it appears there. The Ishtamish B'Tagid Chalif, a person who uses the crown of Torah should die. Now, over there in Pirkei Avos, it's talking about a person displaying themselves as being a big scholar, and in order to get, special treatment because they are a big scholar and such like that. Even though now that I have this project that I'm working on, and I'm not shy to ask contractors and whatnot, do you know anybody who can donate the material? After all, this is going to be a Jewish center. It's not me personal. Right. So I wouldn't say that I'm using the crown of Torah, because it's not for my personal goals. It's for the good of the community.
Of course.
And it says that the tzaddikim rechasam amon shel yisrael. And God really doesn't want people to spend a lot of money in their tzedakah projects, just whatever they can get by with. And so with some people it's like a lot more than other people. But whatever anybody could contribute from like those lumber yards and, pipe fitting places and, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So we'll be glad to accept it. Okay, so anyway. So, but that's it. Says, so anybody who uses the crown of the Torah he will die. And then it says, in Tani de Eliyahu, wait a minute, did I skip something? Yeah. It says, what does it mean? Zeh ha-mishtamish b'mir sh'shayna halachas kisro shel Torah. This is a person who uses the halachas for his own gains. Yeah. Meaning that this person knows halacha, and because it's possible, in this instance, the conservative movement, when it started, their goal was to maintain halacha. That's what they wanted to do. If there was a lenient opinion within the realm of halacha, they followed it.
They wanted to go that way.
They wanted to go that way. Okay, we wanted to make it such that we can make life easier for everybody. The halacha is not going to get in the way. And it talks about being about halachas that, like, for example, you would never do it even though you're allowed to. Like, the standard one, which is quoted, is you could sit in the bathroom with an apple in your shel rosh with your head uncovered. Okay, those are all, technically speaking, you can sit in the bathroom without your yarmulke. And if your shel yad is covered,
right,
then it's, you're allowed to technically go speak and go into the bathroom with it. And if you've already said the bracha on the apple, there really is nothing in halacha that says you can't eat an apple in the bathroom.
Right.
So you could be there, sitting on a toilet, with your shel rosh, with your head uncovered, eating an apple.
Shel rosh is it?
Shel yad, excuse me.
You mean the tefillin?
The hand, yes. The shel yad. If it's covered, you're allowed to go into a bathroom.
Okay, covered.
Okay. So, This is what's permitted according to halacha.
Sitting or standing?
Sitting.
Sitting?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah, because it's covered. Like,
it's covered. You can
yeah. So now, so if a person knows halacha really well and uses halacha as a way of gaining their own material goods, you might say, for their own ulterior motives.
Right.
So the Megillah poses that this person is going to pass away. I mean, we're all going to pass away, but unless Mashiach comes. Then, but it says the idea of using, this is called the crown of terror. There's a point he's going to mention in later on. Tanya de Eliyahu, it is learned in the yeshiva of Elijah. Kol hashena halachas muftach lo shkulo. So this is in Masech Tanida. And it says over there, we say this, anybody who learns halacha every single day is guaranteed that they will have a place in the world to come. One of the reasons why the Rebbe instituted the learning of Rambam was because, as the Rambam writes in his introduction, that there is no, when, since he wrote the Mishnah Torah, that what does a person need to do is he needs to learn Tanakh, and then he needs to learn his Sefer Yad HaChazakah, and he will have learned the entire Torah. Of course, the Hasagas arrive, but argues on that and says, "Nah, not so fast, everybody." But so there it is. All the halachas are there. So the Rebbe, even those laws which are not practically applicable now, the Rebbe says that a person who learns halacha every day is guaranteed a place in the world to come. Why is it that the halacha specifically is called the crown of the Torah? I would really think the Kabbalah should be the crown of the Torah. Halacha deals with, like, tying your shoes and meat and milk and this guy hitting that person. What's that got to do? That's like more like shovels or shoes, you know. Whereas a crown would be, you're talking about Atzilus and an Ak and Simtsumim. That to me would sound like the crown. But no, specifically halacha is called the crown. And then he asks another question. V'lama hashreina halachas dafka muftach lei. Why specifically is it, if a person learns halacha every day, that they're guaranteed a place in the world to come? V'lo shar divrei Torah. There's no lack of other things to learn. So if a person is sitting and learning Gemara and Chumash and Medrash and Kabbalah, so he's not going to Olam Haba. Okay, does that make sense? V'kein lahav and maimer rizal and perik yudalef and menachis. And also there's a third gemara that he quotes, quoting from Menachos. Afila loishana adam el perik echad shachris kula yatsi dechavasei. It says over there, what's the minimum that a person needs to learn on a daily basis? Is a chapter of halacha. Actually, it's actually a chapter of Mishnayos. Mishnayos is here is called halacha. A chapter in the morning, a chapter and at night. That's your MDR for learning Torah. Okay, so but then he asks, "V'lama ain yesh dechavos v'shar divrei Torah? Why can't I learn a Tanya? You tell me if I learn a parak of Tanya in the morning and a parak Tanya at night, I have not fulfilled any obligations for learning Torah. It has to be specifically have a revolving around halacha in order to fulfill my MDR. Those are the three questions." Okay, so now, since that's the main point of the pasuk is Eshet Chayla Teres Baila, the woman is the crown to her husband. halacha is called the crown. So, and then therefore, what the ultimate is explaining is the pasuk, not the idea of halacha. That's a tangent. And so, how then is it going to relate the idea of halacha back to crown, being that that is the crown to her husband? Who, and you have to ask the question: who's the Yesha? Who's the Baal? Ah, but we got time. We're not going to do this all in one day. It's known. Ma sha'amar izal. Yeah, I have to make note. What's understood about Harizal, that which is written in the Kabbalah. Shekol Adam Yisrael Tzarech Levoy Bil Gilgolim Rabim. He says here every Jew. Nah, Lavdafka, every Jew. I would say the majority of Jews, to the point where you could say everyone, but there are certain specific ones that don't. Every single Jew needs to come back. And he says here, "Begilgulim rabim," in lots of incarnations. The Arizal said, it's not unheard of. It should be understood that it's going to probably take four lifetimes for a person to do everything they need to do. Okay? Yeah, go prove it. Okay, yeah.
Come back. Then you have to come back as a woman, as a Kohen, as to get the...
Oh, he mentions that. He mentions that right here also. Right? Oh,
okay, good.
Okay.
Because you can't do some washer in a certain...
There are certain mitzvahs I hope never to do. There's a mitzvah to divorce your wife. I don't want to do that. That's a conditional thing.
Let's not go there.
That's one of 613.
Yes. Oh, okay. It says when a man will hate his wife, it now becomes a mitzvah for him to give his wife a get.
Right.
So, I hope never to do that mitzvah.
Right.
You know, I'll come up to with my scorecard and I'll say, you know, hey, dear... we've done 612. We only have one more left. Maybe we should just get divorced just for the heck of it, right? Yeah, no. Mm. Not happening. So it's to fulfill all the teriyak mitzvahs. Hatera, but machshava dibur umaisa. And it's not just enough to do all the mitzvahs. He doesn't say to do the mitzvahs. He says to fulfill the mitzvahs in thought, speech, and action. Because every mitzvah, first of all, it says back in...
Did you say 40 lifetimes?
Four.
No, did you say 40?
No, four lifetimes. Four times. Four times.
No, but you just qualified it thought, speech, and action. Speech and action. I just wondered if you actually meant 40 lifetimes.
No. No, I just thought this isn't the result.
Fair enough.
I mean, the result kind of knew these things. How he knew these things, I don't know.
He should be correct.
Yeah, the result spoke to candles. I'm not going to...
Yeah, okay, second, right.
We're second not, judge
yeah, him. Yeah, let's not go there.
You know, so...
Yeah.
The it's not enough. Oh, back in chapter 5. So there, at the end of chapter 5, he calls the mitzvahs levushi ha-neshama. Levushi ha-nefesh. The mitzvahs provide a clothing for the soul. So that the soul can present itself. And also, another thing that clothing does is it protects... Okay. The person, so the mitzvahs protect the person so that after they hit 120, they can experience more godly revelation because the mitzvahs provide this protective cover and thereby have a greater expression of godliness. So it's there are different details in every single mitzvah. Okay, so we have just generally, and we talked back in chapter 40 about kavana. So kavana is going to be the machshava, the thought of the mitzvah.
Right, sure.
The halacha is going to be the dibur, the speech of the mitzvah, and the absolute performance of it is going to be the maisa of the mitzvah. So now we see, that's what it says. For example, why should a person learn about karbanis or tuma and tara? It's not, are you wasting your time? It's not, you can't put it to practical application. You learn all the laws about para aduma, and you become the world expert on para aduma. Yeah, so that and $3 will get you a coffee at Starbucks. I mean, you know, what are you going to do with this information?
Which Starbucks for $3?
So, anyway, a small Starbucks.
Yeah.
So, not with any fancy title on it.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So, the But no, it says if those mitzvahs, why is it that those mitzvahs can't be performed? Is because God says, well, we don't need to be performing those right now.
Exactly.
I mean, this is all divine providence, which mitzvahs you can perform and which mitzvahs you cannot perform.
Yeah.
And so Hashem has deemed that Seder Kachim and Seder Tahara is pretty much not relevant to our daily lives. That's as far as performance goes. There's still two other parts. You still have the Dibur and the Machshava. So when a person sits and learns, that's what it says. It actually says that if a person sits and learns about learns a specific halachas about a certain mitzvah, so, and if a person cannot do that mitzvah, so Hashem considers it as though they did that mitzvah. Okay. There is a deal, I learned about this, when I first went to yeshiva, that there's certain times when Hasidim are very careful to go to mikveh. There's times that you should go before Yom Kippur, you should go on every Yom Kippur, you should go. But for example, before going to the Rebbe, a person, Lubavitcher should go to the mikveh. What happens? A person's not in a position to go to a mikveh for whatever reason. So I was told, if you'll learn chapter 7 of Mikvos, which happens to be in the back of the Lubavitch Siddur, it has the same effect on your neshama as dunking in the water. Okay? Because what does dunking in the water do for you? Besides get you wet, but you have to dry yourself off.
Right.
Exactly. Okay, you want to say all kinds of things. There's bittel over there. That tefillah is icy as bittel. Okay, that's the kavanah behind it.
Right. That's not the
actual, it's the...
That's not the wet.
Yeah. Okay, it's getting into the water and being surrounded by the water is what does it.
Yeah.
So your neshama, so we don't understand what that does. So your neshama also, if a person learns the halachas of mikveh,
right.
So it has the same effect as going to the mikveh. Okay, so there is a big point, a major point in learning about all of the mitzvahs.
Yes.
Lahashlim levushei nafshai. Because what happens when a person does, speaks, and thinks all of the mitzvahs properly, so that then completes the garments of his soul. Ulataknam, and to fix them. Now, let's stop over here. We're talking about, there's actually a discussion in the commentaries, is what is he talking about?
Yeah.
Because we say the Nefesh HaLakis doesn't need any tikkun. The Nefesh HaLakis is fine. It didn't come into this world to fill in any gaps or lacking that it might have, because it has no gaps or lacking. However, that's the nefesh by itself. That's the neshama.
Right.
The neshama is now enclosed in thought, speech, and action. So it has thought, speech, and action. And what can a person think about as far as nefesh elokis? It's only things that they learned about. So that tells us that the levush, the garments, the clothing of the Nefesh HaLakis are not perfect. They do need to be fixed and completed.
Right.
So that I can have a proper kavana for doing a mitzvah once I learn what the kavana is. So there's that opinion. But then there's another opinion that says, so it's the Nefesh HaLakis. There's another opinion that says, no, we're talking about the Nefesh HaBahamas. The Nefesh HaBahamas is one of the major reasons why we are alive, as far what our purpose is. Of course, we're alive because of Nefesh HaBahamas. That's what makes us alive. But the Nefesh HaBahamas, fixing up the Nefesh HaBahamas, which is enlivening the body and elevating it to a state of spirituality, is one of our main functions in the world. And that then comes through the thought, speech, and action of the mitzvahs. Okay, but to fix the mav shalayi levushi dechasara, so that the garment shouldn't be missing something.
Right.
So that it's going to take four times or so, a bunch of times to do all these things. Mm-hmm. And he excludes a question that you asked: levad from mitzvahs ataluyas b'malach, excluding the mitzvahs that are obligatory of a king only, that only a king can do them. Because Meluk, if you want to say there's mitzvahs that a Sanhedrin does, so there's 70 places on a Sanhedrin. You could kind of like cycle through a bunch of people through that, no problem.
Yeah.
But kings, There's only been 20. There's only been 27 of them. It's not a whole lot of there.
Not many righteous ones.
Yeah.
Let's not go there.
Yeah.
Shehum Isikol Yisrael, that he does it on behalf of all Israel. And that's really true with those mitzvahs that we can't do now that other people can't. Like, for example, women. It says women are putter from mitzvah shehazman grama.
Right.
They do not have to do mitzvahs which have basis in time limitations. Okay, putting on tefillin, wearing tzitzis, hearing shofar, hearing megillah, saying nishma, davening, these type of things. Anything that has to do with time, they're not obligated to do it. Okay, so what happens if a lady wants to do them? Is this counterproductive? I mean, normally, when you tell somebody, oh, by the way, you don't have to do this, human nature is to go, oh, thank you very much. Okay, that's human nature. But you always have those people who want to say, well, wait a minute.
Well, wait a minute, why can't I?
I want to do that.
Right.
Yeah. So don't tell me I'm exempt. I want to do that. So right. This is one of the ways a woman shouldn't feel pressed that she's missing out on something. Okay, because what's happening when a person does a mitzvah, we know, this is like, you know, Chabad Yeshiva 101. When a person does a mitzvah, they make a connection to Hashem.
Yes.
Okay? So being that this person, this woman, has a beshert.
Right.
When the beshert does, what's the beshert? The beshert is their other half.
Right.
Just like it was that Chava and Adam were one body separated into two.
Right.
So too also a husband and wife that are beshert.
Right.
So they're two bodies which connect and become one. So when the husband does the mitzvah, when the husband puts on tefillin, so the wife is also putting on tefillin. And they don't even have to be married yet. It could be that this bachur is 13.
Right.
And this girl is 11.
Right.
So as soon as this bachur starts putting on tefillin, this 11-year-old is putting on tefillin because eventually they're going to get married. They're going to be one body. So it's not that they're one body. They're not one body now. They are. They just haven't found each other yet. Go ahead.
The implication is in that case, then the mitzvah transcends time.
Oh, absolutely.
So
that shouldn't surprise you.
It doesn't at all. No, not at all. But it begs the question.
Also, this transcends place, by the way.
Agreed.
This person could be on the other side of the world.
Agreed. Of course, that's a given. The implication then is if that mitzvah transcends time, do these incarnations if they transcend time, are they necessarily linear?
No, definitely not. It's definitely holistic. It's all going back. It's all, first of all, it's all accumulative.
Right.
Okay? It's not that you're doing whatever you did this lifetime and went, oh, shucks, that's all I did. Got to come back. No. It's all built up. The expression used in the Gemara is that we're midgets on the top of giants, standing on the shoulders of giants, meaning we've got the accumulation of all the previous, right, whatever, lifetimes, generations,
sure,
and we're just adding the final touches at this point.
Right.
Okay. There is something written in one of the Sefer Kabbalah from the Arizal that says that the storehouse of neshamas was emptied in Lamed Vav, is what it says. So being that I became from in Tafshin Lamed Vav, so people, when someone saw this, they got all excited and said, oh, must be Tafshin Lamed Vav is when all the new souls are empty. But it doesn't say Tafshin Lamed Vav. It just says when all this when it comes Lamed Vav, so then all the souls will be out of the treasure, the new soul treasure, and it doesn't say what Lamed Vav is.
Right.
Could be a year, could be something else.
Yeah.
We don't know. So the Rizal was not clear on it. And between you and me, what difference does it make?
Right.
Does it mean anything to you if you were told you had a new soul or if you've been here before? Would it change anything, any part of your attitude? Considering what you know now, I mean, if it was that you knew what your previous lifetimes were and you knew what you did in your previous lifetimes, and you knew that in this lifetime you only have to do X, Y, and Z, so what would you do in this lifetime?
X,
Y, and Z, and that'd be it. After that, you kick back because that's all I need to be here for. So we're not told what we need to do. So it would have no forbearance whatsoever knowing if you're a new soul, an old soul, a been-here soul, how many times you've been here before, 100 times, whatever, how many times, 4 times, 2 times, what, doesn't make any difference.
Right.
Because we have to live in the moment.
Right.
Basically.
This moment.
Yeah, it's kind of like Hebrew grammar. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this before. Hebrew grammar is based on the Torah, unlike other languages, where you could analyze why is it that you have this construct and these tenses and they are the way that they are, and there is like a rationale behind its development. With Hebrew, it's exactly the opposite. It's, we have these words in these orders. Let's figure out some kind of rule that would fit to why this,
why they're constructed this way. Right.
Okay, because it's all based on Tanakh.
Right.
That's Hebrew grammar is based on Tanakh. So now there's a very common rule of grammar. It's called Vav HaHipuch. That if you want to say, and he said, you say, he will say with a vav in it, and that makes it, and he said. If you want to say, and he will said, he will say, then you say, he said. You stick a vav in front of it, and that makes it, and he will say. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's called vav HaHipuch. It's all over the place. He says, you know, in Darchei Torah, they translate Hebrew into Hebrew in the Chumash. So they have the translation, Vayomer v'hu amar. Which Vayomer would be, and he will say, but they should, and Vahu, and he, Amar, said. Okay? So that's the deal. So now, so since this is the way it is, it means that the Vav can convert the past to the future, and the future to the past. Okay? So I asked a Makubal about this idea of Vav HaHipuch, and the possibility of somehow tying into the energy of this Vav HaHipuch, so that we could make the past future and the future past, and he laughed at me. They all laughed at me! No, he laughed at me with something very profound and like, duh. He said, that would only work if you were in the past or the future, but you live in the present, and there's nothing changes the present. You can't get out of the present.
Right.
There's no way to do that.
Right.
So.
Right.
So, anyway, so it doesn't help. Anyway, v'tam hu kidei lehalbish kol teriag b'chines kecha sher v'navshe achas mehen alay ne'erda. Ne'erdra, excuse me. And all this is in order to rectify the whole entire soul with all of its garments, which is an expression of the 613 commandments, which are expressed by the 613 powers or vestiges of the soul, and that not one should be missing. Because we know that there are 613 body parts, because there are 613 soul parts, and because there are 613 body parts with the 613 soul parts, there are 613 connections that we can make with Hashem. And we already learned in Agaras HaTshuva that our souls are connected to Hashem via a rope, which is comprised of 613 strands. And when a person has now completed the rope, their connection to Hashem is absolute. So now, what do we need these garments for? Why can't I relate directly to Hashem? What's my nefesh elokis? My nefesh elokis is a chelek elokim amal mamish. If you could draw a picture of our nefesh elokis, a nafshe elokis, it would look exactly like Hashem.
Right.
So what do I need to have these intermediary things of the mitzvahs? This is not the mitzvahs of the animal soul that we're talking about over here. This is the mitzvahs in order that I should be, the levushim of the mitzvahs, that I should be able to connect myself to Hashem better. What do I need it for? Hashem doesn't have garments. I don't need garments. Let's do it essence to essence. So it's Mavor B'Zohar Umuvin L'Kol Maskil. Says that Zohar explains it at great length. If you'd be smart, you wouldn't even need to ask the question. Ki leisha nefesh v'ruach ha'neshama sheba adam hein ruchin is nivrayim v'yoshar l'shum nivr l'hasig shum ha'sagag b'bayir v'yoshar ha'kol ha'kol b'arin se'baruchu. It says, okay, So your neshama looks like Hashem. But there's one difference. This Hashem is Hashem, and your neshama is your neshama.
Right.
One's the creator. Neshama is the creation. However much of a creation is, however sublime it happens to be. And even if it looks exactly like Hashem, it's a creation.
Right.
And therefore, it's missing something from Hashem. It's missing something. And it cannot in any way come to being a true infinity like Hashem is. And even after the neshama is illuminated from the light of the emanator that has now gone through the creation process through many different simsumim, madrega acha madrega, with level down to level, b'chinas simsumim v'atzumim v'levushim rabim v'atzumim hayidur l'yachidichein, and this whole process with all the details that it is and the myriads upon myriads, the infinite number of steps in the creation process, and that's just so that Hashem can relate to our neshama. We're not talking about, here's not talking about physical world. This is talking about what had to happen in order for our neshama to come about. Tremendous creation process to go from creator to created.
Right.
Between the simsim atzumim levushim ravim atzumim hayudim leirachim and nikraim beidur rabba b'shem Cyrus. So in the Zohar, the section of the Zohar is called Idra Rabba. There's lots of sections in the Zohar. But in this one, it refers to the Tzimtzumim as hair. Hair, do you ever do one of that expression in like 10th grade biology where you have to learn how to microscope and you put a hair underneath a microscope? Okay, and you're shocked to see that a hair is a hollow tube. Wow, a hair is a hollow tube. Okay, because, and hair grows, hair is alive.
Right.
So what's happening is that there's a very diminuated amount of life going into the hair such that you can cut the hair and not feel anything. But there is life going through it, but because it's hollow, it's coming through. And it's not a whole lot of life that actually goes from inside your skull, which is where the life is coming from, to the outside in your hair. So the Idra Rabba refers to the creation process as a series of channels which would be akin to hair. How much godliness is now, and it's not just a hair, it's a hair of a hair of a hair of a hair of a hair. So the amount of godliness is coming into this world is really quite little. Kedeksi beninil, v'sareisha ka'amar naka. Her head on her hair was like pure wool. Referring to, Daniel was talking about the Shekhinah, the divine prophet, the divine presence, which is Malchus of Atzilus.
Right.
The hair on the head of the divine presence, as described over there, is the divine presence is called the creator. So the hair which was on it is in order to convey this little minute amount of godliness down here.
And that's called creator.
And even with all that, your soul can't take it directly. Even the little amount of godliness that's coming down into the world, are coming down into your soul. The minute amount is described over here. We're talking about your soul can't take it directly. It would just dissolve. He says also that's why you need to have the levushim.
Right.
Remember, levushim garments protect. As it says, in order to look at the sweetness of Hashem, that a person should be able to appreciate and to also give. It's a two-way street. We're getting tainug, but we're giving Hashem tainug as well. The main impetus of why we do anything is for pleasure. And it happens to be that we're patterned against Hashem, we're B'Tselem Elokim, we're patterned after Hashem. So the impetus of Hashem's creation and putting us in this world, that we should be able to control ourselves, is in order to give Hashem pleasure. And pleasure is the deepest part of who we are, so pleasure is also the deepest part of what Hashem is. As it says, you should find he'll make himself delight on Hashem. And be satiated from the sparkle, from the shining.
Is that when we say deepest part, is that deepest part of creator?
No, because there's always more creator. But as far as we go, we kind of just like stop right there.
Right, of course. I mean, we can't get beyond
no, that. But that's the part that relates to us. There's creator right. that doesn't relate to us. So the deepest part of creator that relates to us would be Tainug.
Yeah.
Would be pleasure.
Right, okay. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, well, Lashon Tzacha Tzemach, right, is this whole idea that Tzachas is shining, is a way of the, like a shining of a torch. Kamosha Kasav B'Zohar, Ve'eng V'Kecha L'Kavel Hane'imas V'Harivas HaTzachas Shulei Teitzi Miner Taka Tizbazel B'Metzias Kener V'Avuka. So it says that we do not have, the soul does not have the ability to receive this full pleasure and sparkle without having to, without going totally and completely out of its box, its parameters, and becoming nullified in its existence like a flame in the presence of a torch. And what does happen, it's all one sentence, is that the light itself, the godliness, the radiance, goes through the process and it's drawn down some little tiny bit through the creation process, madrega achar madrega, level after level, b'tzimtzumim rabim, ad sheyivra memena levush echad, Nivra, and so that it creates something which can relate to the created entity. And that the soul will be able to now be able to withstand somewhat of this revelation coming through this garment. Because what are the levushim of the neshama? They're also made out of ruchnias, they're also neshama. They're also elikus.
Right. Sure, of course.
And so the elikus is now acting as a filter.
Right.
In order that we should be able to achieve more light. So that we can comprehend it and not be blown out of the water. Like for example, if you looked at the looking at the sun. You can't really look at the sun. It's not, I don't recommend it. But if you look at Derech Hashisha Zacho Me'ira Kulu, if you look at the sun, through, I guess he didn't have them, but I guess you could use the example welder's glasses, then you could see. I remember there was an almost total eclipse over here, I don't know how long ago, maybe 15 years ago or so, maybe. And
it was a partial, like, three or four years ago.
I know, there was something that was like, it got really pretty dark over here.
Yeah.
It was about 15 years ago or so, and the guy lent me a pair of welder's glasses.
Right.
And it was really pretty cool, flipped out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't, when I put them on and I could look straight, I couldn't see a thing.
Right.
But when I looked up at the sun, so I could see the moon coming right. in front of the sun.
Right.
Okay. So that's what's happening to us, is that the garment is providing a screen to allow us to derive the full benefit of this eclipsed light. As it says, Moshe had to go into a cloud. Everything is always according to, it's always through a cloud. The Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, in a cloud.
Right.
And this is we're going to stop. The first word in the line is Derech Ha'anan, right by the dot, about 10 lines from the bottom of the page. Kuf Mem Tes. To be continued.